Oh, this is the first hearing, right?
You ready? All right, we are back on the record, and the next item on the agenda is number 2015-2016, number 107, the Colorado Redistricting Commission. And just for those in the audience, someone asked me about the executive session that we have scheduled. It's just a general discussion of the positions we're going to take on briefs in the Supreme Court. So it's not specific to any one case, and I didn't want people to think we were having executive discussions about their particular cases. Those would be done in public, and it's more of a procedural discussion. So anyway, 2015-2016, number 107, Colorado Redistricting Commission. If the proponents could come forward and introduce yourselves.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Frank McNulty, proponent for Initiative 107.
And I'm Kathleen Curry, also a proponent for Initiative 107.
And if we could start out, if you could tell us what you believe the single subject of your measure is.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The single subject is the drawing of political districts in the state of Colorado.
Does anyone on the board have any questions regarding the single subject? Is there anyone signed up to speak on this? One? Did you want to speak on the single subject? Okay. We'll go ahead and why don't you come on up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for your time. My name is Jason Legg. Speaking just a single subject, I think the single subject analysis relates to, as much as we're going to talk about the title language as well, the initiative itself getting single subjects set also relates to the initiative itself not being misleading. I think some of the words used in the statutes that I'm sure you guys are more familiar with than I am, I'm going to cite some of it anyway. The Supreme Court's motive is to prevent surprise and fraud from being practiced upon voters. The General Assembly kind of clarified that further. Saying that single subject requires that initiatives aren't misleading, and that's what you guys did a rule on too with the hearing for setting single subject itself. And I think that some of the language in the initiative itself is misleading, specifically.
Do you take that precedent to mean that we're allowed to look at the substantive provisions of the proposed initiative to determine whether those substantive provisions are misleading or whether by bundling two separate subjects together the proposal becomes misleading to an average voter who's asked to vote on the whole thing?
Yeah, I think that you have to look at the initiative's language itself to see if it is surreptitious in doing the single subject analysis. I think that I get the distinction that you're drawing as far as looking at two different subjects, but I think that the language in the statute says you have to look at whether or not the initiative is surreptitious and could mislead voters in making a conclusion or determination on single subject itself. And that's what I'm speaking to. And maybe that's a point we'll disagree on, but I'll just continue down that line of thinking right now. The initiative states that its mission in 43.5 is to end gerrymandering, and it describes gerrymandering as the drawing of political districts with the intent to favor or disfavor a political party. And it says the initiative is designed to end that. So specifically, fair representation requires that the practice of political gerrymandering, whereby congressional and senatorial districts and representative districts, et cetera, are purposely drawn to favor one political party or incumbent, and that must end. However, later in the initiative, the nonpartisan staff and the commission is directed to draw competitive districts. And what the natural definition of competitive and what it must be in this context is that the districts have lower margins between the victorious the winning party and the losing party, the winning candidate and the losing candidate. So inherently what they're doing is they're drawing the districts to favor the losing candidate or party. They're, in order to make them competitive, you're going to go from a gap of 3-1 to 2-1, for example. And that's drawing the districts to be more competitive, but it's also doing it to favor the minority party, the losing party. So I think those two provisions are inconsistent and misleading. You might have a voter in a district who votes for this measure because they want to end gerrymandering and they want to end the practice of drawing districts in favor of legislative districts. But what they're really doing, perhaps in their local district, is voting for an initiative that will result in their local district being drawn to favor the minority party. I think that's misleading. And so I oppose single subjects being set on those grounds. It's 106.5 I'm looking at.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like you're making a policy argument about what is good or not good. And those typically aren't, I mean, title board doesn't consider the merits of a proposal. And so if somebody puts in their statement line that, you know, my purpose is a, you know, healthy environment, and then somebody disagrees that the body of the language actually produces a healthy environment, I mean, that's not typically something that we get into because we're not making subjective judgments on the language itself. I mean, is there something in particular that you believe creates two subjects in its application?
Well, that I'll get to that second question in a moment, but I agree with you on the first impression you get from what I'm saying, that this would require you guys to make substantive determinations as to a measure in that hypothetical. With this proposed initiative, the language itself in different sections of the initiative is directly contradictory. So the language itself, so you're not having to make those substantive determinations. They're saying in one section of the initiative, stop drawing to favor or disfavor a candidate or a party. And elsewhere, they're saying draw to favor a candidate or a party.
I don't know that we can look at, we can interpret this measure to determine whether or not it's going to work well or not in practice. Our limited function here is to determine whether this contains a single subject. So I appreciate your arguments. I understand your objections. I don't think that I can heed those. I would appreciate any thoughts you have on whether there are two distinct subjects in this proposal that prohibit us from setting a title.
So elaborating on that, one subject, and they're contradictory subjects, is to end the process of drawing districts to favor or disfavor a party. Another subject is to draw districts to favor the minority party, or the, not the minority party, I shouldn't use that term here, but the losing party.
Thank you. Other questions? No. All right, anyone else? Sure. Come on up and state your name and your comments on the single subject.
Good morning. My name is Luis Corchado. I, by chance, am here today rather than back in D.C. where I work, so I don't have really a prepared speech, but I am hitting directly, I would like to hit directly on the issue of single subject and follow up on the questions. I have personally lived the two subjects in this initiative. And that is, since 1990, I learned that, well, how do you do the state districts? Well, there's this reapportionment commission that's over there. And how do you do the federal districts? Well, that's, who knows how that's done? That's done through some haphazard process at the whim of the legislature of Colorado. And so for 1990, I had to go to the state Supreme Court to argue for the state redistricting process for legislative districts in the state, and then had to wait to see what happened with the federal redistricting, which in 1990 was a court action in federal court, Denver District Court, the U.S. District Court there. And then in 2002 was a lawsuit that was started in the District Court in Denver State Court, same in 2012. So my view is this is doing two things, this initiative. It is changing the reapportionment commission for state redistricting. And it is establishing a commission for federal redistricting. This is almost a parallel to the 2014 case of Initiative Number 76, where the Supreme Court of Colorado said that revamping one thing and establishing another are two different things. And in my view, that is what's happening here. And it's happening at a fundamental level. The Reapportionment Commission has been working since the citizens have adopted it in 1972, I believe, or 74. 11 members, meetings across the state, 100 districts that have to be drawn, 65 in one house, 35 in another. And everyone knew how that process worked, and it has worked. It's been an uneven number, so it does not allow for a deadlock. It allows for business to be finished. Now, this initiative proposes to not only first change that commission to create an even number, that's a fundamental change, to allow for a deadlock, but secondly, it is eliminated, and I think that's part of the misleading part of this, it does not talk about eliminating the court's role, a nonpartisan body, in appointing some reapportionment commission members. So there's some fundamental changes that are happening here, but big picture is, and to answer the question from the gentleman on the left, I do think that that case I cited, generally the 2014 case, does require that you go through the provisions to see how it plays out and whether it does in fact play out to involve two different subjects. I think the state court, Supreme Court went through the provisions and concluded that it does have two different subjects. So, bottom line for big picture is, these are two different processes that are now being combined and affected in one initiative, and it's unfair to the citizens because they don't easily realize that something that has been working for since the 70s is fundamentally being changed, and on top of that, something is being created and adding to, which, by the way, I support having redistricting through a commission for federal redistricting. I have wanted that for three sessions, so that is not my problem. Nor am I a Republican or a Democrat up here fighting for any particular party. I'm a pain in the neck to both parties, and I have been for three cycles. So I'm up here because it really concerns me that we're doing two different things.
And those two different things being?
That it is changing the reapportionment commission that now exists. Okay, it is going, for example, it is going from an 11-member district.
And placing federal congressional redistricting.
And the second subject is placing federal redistricting into an altered commission. Another big change for the reapportioned commission is, I don't know how to say this nicely, but it is putting all the power into the two parties' hands. It is actually taking out any real involvement of unaffiliated voters. You heard a lot of discussion about unaffiliated voters, who's one-third of the state. They are losing access to this commission because the two parties get to appoint the first 8 seats, and then they get to pick the last 4, which, again, an even number allows Republicans to pick 2 and Democrats to pick 2. And when they don't agree, they can just deadlock this whole thing. So this is really fundamental. It's really big changes to two different systems. And the last kind of quick points I would make to reinforce what was said, there is some misleading stuff about saying that it's a renamed commission. I think it should be called an altered commission so that people know that the commission is being changed, just not being renamed. And among other objections that I have, the last one that I would note is the competitiveness is also misleading because it is removing a major part of what allows this to be competitive in the state redistricting process, and that is the court's role in appointing 4 seats that I have seen typically go to people who are not adamantly partisan. Yes, some were, but I think 1 or 2 were not in each of those years that I was involved in. So let me just stop there and just say that my biggest focus really is the single subject issue, that it collides two processes that are fundamentally different. And I think court precedent will show you, and hopefully I don't have to file a motion for rehearing, that revamping and establishing are two different things. And that's what's happening here. I may answer questions. If not, I'll step aside.
So you would agree that if they just wanted to put the federal into the current system, that would be one subject?
Yes.
Even though you'd be establishing a new system for the federal and you would be creating a commission for the federal?
No, you wouldn't be creating, you would just be giving them an additional duty. And that's saying, we want you to draw this map too. But to change that commission is where you cross the line into having two subjects, is changing the commission. Giving it an additional responsibility, I think kind of like the wine and a beer, maybe, I don't know if that works, but kind of like saying, you can now do the federal districts too, but we're not changing anything about you. Just draw these districts the same way you do the state. Obviously, 7 districts versus 100, it's a big difference, but so I think you're crossing a line when you change the reapportionment commission.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. McNulty, you want to respond to any of that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. If it pleases the title board, I would. We heard a number of points made by the two folks who came to object to the Initiative 107. Most of them were public policy considerations, which are outside of the breadth of the title board's consideration. I will say on the unaffiliated question, you can ask former Representative Kathleen Curry how unaffiliateds feel about this. The current process does not mandate that any unaffiliateds be appointed. Initiative 107 ensures that unaffiliated members and minor party members, those registered with minor parties, are included in this process. In fact, this does more to enfranchise more than one-third of Colorado voters than the current process. As far as the single subject complaints, we do expect that the commission will be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. Both congressional and legislative redistricting were done by the legislature prior to the citizen initiative in the early 70s that removed legislative redistricting out of the legislature's hands. I think part of that was the frustration that people had with politicians drawing their own districts. That same frustration exists today, and it is not unreasonable to ask a commission that has experience in drawing political districts to draw them for congressional and legislative at the same time. In fact, you have different criteria for state Senate districts and state House of Representative districts, and the commission manages to draw both of those. As for the composition of the commission's being charged with drawing congressional and legislative boundaries, including representation, mandated representation, for more than one-third of Colorado's voting public is a change that has to happen, should happen. And all of these things are necessarily connected to the drawing of fair and competitive districts on both the congressional level in Colorado and the state legislative level. We do believe that we have a single subject here, and we appreciate the board's consideration.
Any comments?
In terms of single subject, I think there is a single subject. Whether you describe it as a commission established for redrawing the districts or just regarding the process for redrawing legislative districts, I think it's all connected. You're talking about one entity having the responsibility for both congressional as well as state legislative districts. The fact that you're changing the process involved with the commission, everything from the appointments through their actual process of that they go through in having maps drawn and approving maps, it seems like a single subject to me, and so that's where I'm at.
Yeah, and I agree. I think, again, I'm not for, parsing out which offices they're drawing for. I think it is creating a commission that, and I guess we can get to that issue of whether it's creating one or altering one or establishing one. But it's establishing one to draw for federal and state, and I don't see two subjects there.
I agree. I think this is all the parts here are germane to the main point, which is to set forth procedures for how to redistrict both state and federal district boundaries for political office.
Motion?
Sure.
I move that we find that proposed initiative 2015-2016, number 107, constitutes a single subject and that we proceed to set a title.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, that takes us to the staff draft of the title. Mr. McNulty, do you have any comments on the staff draft?
Thank you, Madam Chair, I do. I'm hesitant to critique it at all with Mr. Berry sitting in the room, but I suspect that his confidence in drafting won't be shaken one bit by any suggestions that I might make to the title that was put forward in front of us today.
We rarely adopt the title in its draft format anyways.
Legislature rarely amends bills. We do agree with the opening line of the title that has been proposed by staff. We do think that changes can be made to the title that make it simpler for the public to understand and make it more true to the motivations that Kathleen, Representative Curry, and I have in bringing this initiative, and that is transparency, open meetings, fair and competitive districts. So at your instruction, Madam Chair, I'm happy to propose changes that we would suggest to the title or proceed in any way that you see fit.
You don't have a draft, do you?
We did not bring a draft. Yeah. We're going to work through this.
Why don't you just propose, and then we'll see if there's comment on your proposals.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first change that we propose is on line 3, striking from changing through members on line 4, inserting establishing appointment of members with equal representation from each major party and those not affiliated with any major party. We believe that more accurately reflects the initiative, the goal and the purpose of the initiative, and we believe that it is more instructive for voters as they are considering this initiative in their ballot box this November.
What else do you have? Why don't you give us all yours and then we'll...
Line 5, beginning with establishing, strike through line 6,
well,
commission.
So line 6 to 7?
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, you're striking your own language.
So, no, I'm sorry. I'm working off of my draft.
Right.
So establishing procedures for the commission, we propose that be stricken right there. No, I'm sorry, Stephen. Just the establishing procedures for the commission. Strike prohibiting certain communications with the commission staff. And strike altering the timing when certain actions must occur. In place of prohibiting certain communications, insert providing that the commission's work be done in public meetings. And we propose the last sentence be creating a timeline for the commission's activities. Thank you.
Do either of the two opponents who spoke earlier or anyone else in the audience wish to speak on the proposed changes or the language itself beyond what we heard it? No? Okay. All On the single subject, I guess I'd like to hear thoughts on whether we're changing the procedures to redraw legislative district boundaries or whether we're creating a Colorado redistricting commission that does certain things.
We are creating a process for redrawing district boundaries. The commission is the tool by which that is done, and the criteria are necessarily the way in which the commission does its work to draw those districts.
Okay. And I'm not sure that I agree that the criteria necessarily goes to a process. It's something that's used in that process, but it's not really procedural.
Okay.
It's more the substance that a plan has to satisfy those criteria to the extent prioritized or required.
Then I guess I do think, going back to some of the comments of the opponents, that in the second line and in connection therewith, we are creating a commission. I'm not sure we're directing a renamed commission, which implies that we just happen to change the name.
Well, something that I'm struggling with at the moment is whether it's helpful to the voters to know that we're taking an existing entity that has certain responsibilities, some of these responsibilities, and now calling it something else and giving it additional responsibilities in terms of the congressional districts. Right now, the way the staff draft is, it just says, it talks about, you know, a renamed commission to draw congressional boundaries, and it doesn't really give any indication that this is, other than renamed, they might be able to catch on, maybe not, in terms of it being an existing entity that currently has responsibility for drawing the state legislative districts, and whether or not that would be helpful. I mean, not so much with single subject, but when we get into the because I just don't know that just saying renaming a commission.
Yeah, I guess that's my issue, is I think we should say something else. Either we're creating a new commission or changing the commission.
I don't know something. If this is helpful, but I'm just focusing on the title clause. The title for number 38 was an amendment concerning redistricting in Colorado, which was broad, and I think that could be a template for what we're doing here.
In terms of dropping the reference to procedures, making it broader,
mm-hmm.
I think that might be.
Well, I guess then we should at least have the discussion. Does that draw voters to the fact that these are different? Because we have to set titles that make it distinct in the mind of the voters. I mean, maybe that's better, to leave the single subject the same and then have the trailers all be showing you what the differences are.
And on 38, it was?
Simply an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning redistricting in Colorado.
You have any thoughts on that, Mr. McNulty, whether it's better to have the same single subject and have different in case they both make the ballot?
We always believe that simpler is better when it comes to ballot titles. And I don't know that I am not concerned with that change.
Even though it's the same title as a competing measure?
Well, the titles will be different in their substance.
Right, but the subject, you're fine with that? Okay.
And perhaps there's a way to address Ms. Eubank's concerns concerning Constitution, concerning redistricting in Colorado. Through the Colorado Redistricting Commission. And then renaming and authorizing the Colorado Redistricting Commission to draw congressional boundaries and legislative boundaries.
And I came with some ideas. But
thank you, Ms. Eubanks.
Shall we deal with single subject first and then move on to the substance? So I would move, or actually it was your idea. Would you like to move?
Either way.
Okay. I would move that we strike the language from the staff draft, the procedures to redraw legislative district boundaries, and replace it with redistricting in Colorado as shown on the screen.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And in terms of my ideas, I think it depends on whether you want to take the approach of that we're creating a new entity that absorbs the current functions of the Reapportionment Commission, or whether you want to talk about more in terms of renaming the Reapportionment Commission, which currently does this as, and then you have the new name, and then adds to that the congressional redistricting, something along those lines, depending on, and I don't know that I feel strongly one way or the other in terms of whether we view this as a recreation or that we're basically taking an existing entity, changing its name, and modifying its functions. And I don't know if the other board members feel strongly one way or the other.
I mean, I think the language is creating one, but which is why I had, you know, creation of the district, of the redistricting commission. But, you know, if you think it's important to the voters that they know there's already one and we're doing, you know, I'm not, that was my suggestion, but I'm open to other ideas.
I think it's significant that there is an existing commission and that this commission will absorb new functions. I think we ought to reflect that. That's just my preference, because I don't think it's quite creation when there is an already existing similar entity that used to do something that this new entity will do.
Madam Chair?
Sure. Go ahead.
So in order to not have duplicative language within the title, would the title board consider adding concerning redistricting in Colorado by the renamed Colorado Redistricting Commission, and then we can use directing the renamed Colorado Redistricting Commission to draw congressional boundaries, we can use that to address the issue of this commission taking on the roles of an existing commission.
What bothers me is I don't know that the term renaming is perhaps helpful to most individuals, knowing that that means that there's something currently existing and we're just changing its name. So when you're in terms of your suggestion that it's the renamed commission, I don't know that that's sufficient to get across the concept that I think perhaps, or at least the detail that might be useful to voters in understanding.
Well, and I think part of the problem is that in 38 we used renaming. And well, I mean, maybe again that's a good or a bad thing.
Well, I mean, we could go the route, and you know, not trying to add words, but I mean, we could go the route of talking about renaming the Colorado Reapportionment Commission, which currently draws state senatorial and representative districts, comma, as the Colorado Redistricting Commission, and then giving the commission the responsibility to draw congressional boundaries. I mean, you could go that route. That sort of lays it out, but it does add a lot of words.
Does add a lot of words.
And that's how we did it, directing that the commission We said renaming the Colorado Reapportionment Commission as the Colorado Redistricting Commission, directing that the commission redistrict congressional districts in addition to state legislative districts.
Yeah, that.
That's what we said.
I do have, Madam Chair.
Yes.
I do have concerns about having these two, the names of these two different commissions in the title. I do think that that could lead to confusion by voters. I think Secretary Buescher had a suggestion that we describe the, we, in the single subject in Colorado, by the Colorado Redistricting Commission, and in connection therewith, expanding the duties of the existing commission to include congressional boundaries.
We've lost our screen.
Yeah.
So you have to share your big projector screen.
At least the big screen works better than when we only had the little screen.
Back.
It's back.
Yeah, I mean, my problem with that is that these two measures do the same thing in that respect, and we're using different language in this one than we were using in the other one. And if they both make the ballot, then are people going to think? It just seems confusing to me to use. It seems like we should use different language where it has, where it's actually doing something different, but not use different language where it's doing the same thing. Because then voters may say, well, how's this one different? This one's expanding the duties. The other one was just renaming the commission.
That's the approach I would prefer, to start with similar language and then after that, changing the language to reflect the differences between the two proposals.
I mean, if we had the same person before us,
right,
with
right.
eight initiatives, that's what we would be doing.
Right.
And so it seems like we should try to follow that process as best we can, because that's how we are distinguishing these questions to avoid the voter confusion. And just have the questions be as similar as we can when they are similar in their effect. Which means it would then read, concerning redistricting in Colorado and in connection therewith, renaming the Colorado Reapportionment Commission as the Colorado Redistricting Commission. Directing that the commission redistrict congressional districts in addition to state legislative districts. And then you start to get into the changes, I think. Because then we started talking about the commission members
right.
and their appointments and publicate, you know, prohibitions on what they can do.
There are two missing between
so,
commission.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
So we would strike directing the rename through the boundaries on line 5?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, that would replace.
Right.
Oh, directing
okay.
that. The
yeah.
Okay, never mind. You're good.
The old language.
Now, the interesting thing will be if this one gets contested.
I had that same thought, but I'm not to ask why. I'm just here to do the public good.
Do you object to or find that problematic in any way?
So to be clear, we are striking on line 5, beginning with directing, and moving through line 6 with boundaries.
Yeah. Stephen, why don't you reflect that on the screen?
As well as the language about expanding the duties. Yeah.
Yes. I think that needs a semicolon.
I think it says it well.
Mm-hmm. It did last time.
Right.
And to be clear, we're only considering lines 2 through 4, and then we'll move on to the other suggested revisions.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Madam Chair, we don't have concerns with the changes on lines 2 through 4.
Okay. Do you want to move those and we'll
I do. I'm ready to move them. Sharon, are you?
Go ahead.
I move the changes as reflected on lines 2 through 6 up to establishing.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. So then we got into the commission members. So I think that from this point on, we can point out all the differences. And
if I could ask a question of Speaker McNulty. Sorry. It's a compulsion.
Too odd.
I know, but I can't do it any other way.
I have to earn a living now.
Most of the time, in terms of while the manner in which, for example, the commission members are appointed, that may be something that's noted in the title, it's usually not the detail, you know, very detailed description. And so for your suggestion in terms of, you know, members, the equal representation from each major party, and whether it should be political party, just based on our previous elections discussion,
right.
I don't know. But and so I'm just curious in terms of your suggestion being more detailed versus our inclination usually maybe not to include that much detail, especially on that type of feature.
Thank you, Ms. Eubanks. Madam Chair?
I'm sorry, what?
The how quickly we fall back into old habits. It is because this is substantively different than others that are in consideration now. We believe that having some level of detail, and this is there's much more detail within the initiative about how these members are appointed and the appointing authorities and all of the implementation pieces. But because this is a substantive difference from other initiatives on this same topic that are in play, we believe that having at least this level of detail will be instructive to voters as they look and perhaps have to compare and contrast multiple initiatives on this topic on the ballot.
I think it comes down to whether this is a central feature of the proposal, and I do think it is a central feature.
The one thing I kind of wanted to go through, if we could, is to look at 38 and go through the things we have in 38 and then just tell me if they're or not true. I can read them to you about yours, because if they're true, I want to leave it in, you know, because I don't want somebody to say, like, one of the things we had in there was they all have to act impartial. So if that was true in yours, which I know it's not, but if it was and we left it out, then it would look like that, you know, we did it for a reason. So
I understand.
Let me just pull it back up and we'll go through it. So after that, we got to, so it was requiring that all commission members be appointed. That's true in yours, right?
It is, though the appointment mechanism for the members in this commission is the same that is existing law.
Right. So we may want to try to track that. And then requiring commission members to act in an impartial manner, that's not included in yours, is it?
We certainly hope that they will.
But it's not included as a requirement. Okay. Creating prohibitions on commission members holding elected office.
We do include that prohibition.
Yeah. So I think we need to include that.
So is your prohibition a broad prohibition or is it only specific?
It's
broad.
And I can't remember on 38.
The other one was
specific
an elected office in a political party or other governmental related positions before and after service. So I think whatever the prohibitions are, we need to put them in there.
So the prohibitions in 107, if you are a lobbyist, you cannot serve on the commission.
Right.
If you are an incumbent member of one of these districts, you cannot serve on the commission. Or if you are a candidate for one of these offices. So if you have some sort of personal interest in these things, you cannot, direct personal interest, you cannot serve.
So maybe we do kind of a trailer with those three prohibitions so that we can show the differences in the prohibition. And then, and establishing, well, hang on. And establishing and prioritizing the criteria the commission will apply in redrawing districts. that's true in yours also. So that would be establishing and prioritizing the criteria the commission will apply in redrawing. Okay.
Correct.
All right.
If I could ask, in terms of the appointment of members with equal representation, would it be more appropriate or accurate to say requiring appointment rather than establishing appointment? I mean, we could say about establishing an appointment process, but I think we maybe just to say requiring appointment, and then because that's really what your measure does. If
yes,
you would
thank
be
you.
Amenable to that.
Thank you.
And then whether it would be helpful to insert political. So it talks about major political party. I just don't know whether voters.
Yes, I agree.
They're just having a party.
Yeah. A major party. Yeah.
Stephen, I think you can put the term political in the first reference to major political party and maybe omit it thereafter.
Okay, yeah. So earlier in line 5 where it says major.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
On the prohibitions for commission members, I would suggest that we list those in the order in which they're listed in the initiative. Lobbyists being first, elected office holders, and then candidates for office.
I agree with that.
Okay.
I don't think there's any substantive problem. I would say rather than creating prohibitions from,
prohibiting
yeah. commission members from.
Not allowing?
Well, I'm going to go back to 38. We said creating prohibition.
We did?
We sure did.
Oh.
I don't know
if that
was you.
A foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds.
We can always improve things.
That's right. I don't mean to make light of that. If there's an objection to changing that language from the proponents or opponents, I'd certainly be willing to hear those.
No, I don't think that's one that's going to throw people off, but I just wanted to be consistent in my analysis of this. Okay, so it's prohibiting commission members from...
Being lobbyists.
Being lobbyists.
And I do think the language was a little different in this versus number 38. I recall going back and forth on that question of creating prohibitions versus prohibiting. And
yeah. Candidate from being lobbyists, candidates for office.
Well, I'm wondering whether we can, because it's candidates for those same offices as being incumbent members, so in terms of being a current candidate or a current member, whether we could somehow
put
combine
them
together.
That, sure.
So that
I would, yeah, exactly. Incumbent members or candidates for,
Madam Chair,
mm-hmm.
for these offices,
for such offices,
for yeah. such offices.
Okay, yeah,
members or candidates
for such offices.
Well, do you want to? It's. Either for the General Assembly or Congress, it's not.
Not for county
all
commissioner.
Public office. Yeah, it's not all public office.
Right.
Well, yeah.
So unlike, I believe, number 38, if you were Secretary of State,
you're in.
You could be appointed.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think we should say adding competitive. I don't know.
I would, hold on. I
before we move on.
I think it needs to be prohibiting commission members from being lobbyists or incumbent members or candidates for either the General Assembly or Congress.
And I'm a little concerned, and a lot of people don't really know what the General Assembly is. I mean, they may relate
yeah,
to
true.
The state legislature. Whether you could say, and most people know what Congress is, but whether you could say for state or federal legislative office, or I mean, we could just say, or for either the state legislature or Congress.
Yeah, I think state legislature or Congress is probably.
Okay.
Mr. McNulty, in your experience, do voters not know what the General Assembly is?
Depends on the issue you're taking up that day, Mr. Yeager.
That doesn't make me very happy.
Very aware of what the General Assembly is doing. Madam Chair, I think these changes lines 4 through 7 are appropriate, and we don't have any objections.
So I would move the language on. I don't know. Have we moved the other language about it, the appointment yet? Did we voted on it?
We only did through 4. Yeah.
Okay,
that's the language.
Okay, so I would move the changes as reflected on the screen on lines 4 through 7 up to the word establishing.
I second.
Oh, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
This is where it gets kind of tricky.
Yeah, did 38 say anything about?
38 was super specific.
It said establishing and prioritizing?
Yeah, it said okay. Establishing and prioritizing the criteria the commission will apply. I don't know how we make sure the voters know that that's a different criteria and.
So the language that's used for the congressional plans, guidance for the congressional plans, is adopted from state statute,
mm-hmm.
state law that was passed in 2010. So would it be helpful, instead of using the word establishing, use the word adopting? Adopting current criteria for congressional plans and adding competitiveness to their criteria for congressional and state legislative districts.
And I don't have the statute in front of me, but and my recollection may be sketchy, but in terms of the statutory provision, is that only applicable to if the congressional issue goes to the courts? I mean, so right now, in terms of what the legislature does, it's not binding.
That is correct. The criteria that were adopted in 107 are existing judicial guidance.
Okay. So in terms of now establishing that criteria constitutionally for the commission to use is a little different. The criteria in the statute right now is only if
when
the only point of
the legislature can't agree.
The only point of confusion I have and maybe it's just a miscommunication. I thought that that judicial guidance was still binding when the maps are drawn in the first instance. And otherwise, if they're challenged, they will be overturned if they're not consistent with that guidance. So they are still binding on the first drawing of the maps. But maybe I don't have a nuance there that you're articulating.
I'm not sure. I mean, while that may be established by case law, I don't know if there's a statutory provision that establishes that criteria for the state legislature when it's doing what it does. I think the statutory criteria as it exists right now is only
well,
once it goes to the court. And so
one way or the other, perhaps just for purposes of discussion, it would be accurate in either event to say adopting current judicial criteria.
And I guess I would have to rely on others' expertise in terms of knowing whether they truly are exactly, you know, in terms of current and or whether there were any changes.
Or perhaps it's better just to say existing, and that nuance is not central. They are criteria. They do apply to this function. Whether they're judicial or not, I don't know if that's a central matter that needs to be included.
And I'm probably more comfortable with existing, to use the term existing. And, you know, if you throw judicial in, that's, I'm fine. I mean, the fact that you're now creating it constitutionally.
I'm fine with existing. It doesn't matter to me whether we use judicial or not.
I suggest adopting existing criteria and cutting out current judicial.
Okay. So existing instead of current judicial.
Existing criteria instead of current judicial. And I'm just curious, should we be saying congressional districts rather than congressional plans? I mean, we talk about the criteria for legislative districts, whether I know that plans and maps and all of that is all involved in this, but I think that may be more helpful.
Okay.
And consistent.
Or say, and adding competitiveness to the criteria for drawing state legislative districts, that's what you're getting at?
I don't know, but I think that part's
fine. You think that's, okay.
I think it's fine. Because then if you put drawing, then you have to put drawing for congressional, too, and...
Oh, so your change was just for consistency's sake. I see.
Right. There's criteria for districts in both instances.
We do think that these suggestions improve the initiative. If the board does decide to move this direction, then we have a suggested change on line 8. Criteria for congressional and state legislative districts.
Oh. Yeah.
Competitiveness is not included in the judicial direction that currently exists.
Yeah, I think that's necessary.
Right. We're good with this language?
So change for state legislative districts to for state legislative and congressional districts?
Right.
Oh, okay.
Now, just a question for the proponent. Why do you say adding competitiveness rather than adding fairness and competitiveness? The language of the initiative is fair and competitive.
Because we're comfortable with the way in which the staff draft addressed this.
Okay. I don't necessarily have a concern. I just wanted to see if the board had any question about that.
I'd actually be a little concerned with the word fairness.
I would too.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, I move the changes as reflected on lines 7 through 8 of the current red line.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye. So the next clause would be, should it be establishing that only the nonpartisan staff or providing that only the staff, the nonpartisan staff may submit plans to the commission.
Yeah, I think it's a requirement.
We're allowing, but.
Well, it is, Madam Chair, it is a requirement.
Okay.
Nonpartisan staff drafting the plans is a central component of this initiative, as opposed to having the parties drafting their own plans and then submitting them. Having the nonpartisan staff drafting these plans is an important piece of this initiative. And removing the partisan piece as much as possible.
I'm good.
I'm comfortable with that change.
Yeah, I'm good. Okay. So I would move that we adopt the language beginning with requiring on line 9 through line 10 up to the word providing.
You want a second?
Sorry, I second.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye. My question about the next clause is, I think there are a lot of provisions packed into this idea of openness. There's the openness itself, there's the reporting of communications, et cetera, et cetera. My question for the proponents and the board is, I don't think we can or should pack all that detail into the title. And I wonder if public meetings captures all of the central features. Or encompasses all the central features that we should capture in the title.
I think the only one it doesn't cover is a commission member by themselves maybe going to talk to somebody, which is prohibited, but not prohibited under an open meeting concept. Right?
So,
I mean,
true.
Are you satisfied with it?
You can't talk to staff.
Right. And they have to report any conversation. The commissioner would have to report any conversations that he or she had with, say, a map drawer from the Republican Party or the Democratic Party.
Right.
If they're having those conversations about drawing congressional districts, they would have to say, I talked to so-and-so from the Democratic Party, or I talked to so-and-so for the Republican Party, so that people would know that those conversations were taking
right.
place. There is a distinction. And to address your point, Madam Chair, there is a distinction in using the term public meetings as opposed to open meetings, because open meetings does have a connotation under state statute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you're not adopting the open meetings law here precisely. You're echoing some of its requirements. But
We are incorporating it by reference.
Right.
That's right.
Through its
but
how it's commonly.
But adding additional provisions.
Right.
Yeah.
Correct. And the goal of all of these provisions, as Mr. Yeager touched on, is the expectation that the commission's work be done in public.
Yeah.
That we take these meetings and the map drawing out of the back rooms from wherever the political parties want to huddle and drive all of that work, all of that information into the public view, which we believe will lead to better decisions and better districts and better elected officials. And the public ought to know that we expect all of this work to be done in public meetings and in their full view.
So, I mean, is that enough, or does there need to be a provision that says requiring disclosure for outside communications? Or, I mean, if you're satisfied with public meetings, I guess I'm.
Well, if you go that way, then, I mean, I think there's three different. I mean, first you have the disclosure of communications with outside people. Then you have the prohibition of communications among the commissioners if there's four or more. And then there's the restrictions on conversations with the staff. And so if you go down the road of disclosing outside, then whether you have to also include those others. And I'm not sure, even though some of the prohibited communications can result in a commissioner being removed, I don't know if that's really a central feature.
Well, see, I think all those other things are included in Those other things are all prohibitions. They're prohibiting you from talking to staff, prohibiting you from getting together with a certain number. But the one about you going off and talking to the party isn't prohibited.
No, you just have to disclose it.
You just have to disclose it. So, I mean, to that extent, everything else is being done in a public meeting. The thing that's, because it's otherwise prohibited, the thing that's not being done is you going out, the thing that's not being prohibited is you going out and sitting in the back room with the party, as long as there's not other commissioners there, you could go do that. You would just have to come back and disclose it.
Maybe requiring that the commission's work be done publicly or disclosed to the public, something like that. I don't like the word transparency because I think that's qualitative. Rather than it sort of leans into non-neutral territory, and I assume that there's going to be a lot of talk about transparency on in the ballot election process. But I think done publicly or and then disclosure are the two sides of the coin that the chair was.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with the way it was if that's okay with the proponent. I was just offering that was the only thing that
the point of each one of those provisions is that the information be driven to a public meeting. So we are comfortable with the proposal that we had in front of us on this point. I don't know that we're opposed to
be done.
What
was it? Be done in public meeting.
Public
meetings. I'm fine with that. I just wanted to have the discussion.
Yeah, I think I'm fine with it. I mean, my idea of the impact of those restrictions is that one commissioner alone meeting with outside folks can't make any decision for the commission, and especially since only staff can offer plans. The prohibition against a group of commissioners, four or more, I think is the number, in terms of them deciding outside of a meeting to take a certain action when they get in the meeting. And then I don't know about the staff, other than sort of undue influence on the staff who's drafting the plans. But to me, it's, again, everything's happening in a public meeting. So I think I'm fine with the language as it's drafted right now.
I agree.
How about the next?
And so, Madam Chair, if with the other changes that have been made, I would suggest that we end the title after meetings and strike timeline for the commission's activities. There's a timeline in existing law. It's part of the process that's there. And we did strike earlier the phrase on establishing procedures for the commission. I think that we're good. And we would propose that change to my change.
I'm fine with that too.
Is there any feature of how your proposal at certain points or under certain contingencies requires filing with the Supreme Court? Do you find that necessary to point out, or do you think it's not central?
To us, those points in the initiative are simply a way to encourage the commission to adopt what we would consider fair and competitive plans. And I think those concepts are covered with the title language that we have here in front of us today.
And can I ask just one question for clarification? I know that the measure provides that if the commission doesn't decide on legislative districts, then the second plan goes to the Supreme Court. It doesn't say anything about when the commission doesn't approve a congressional. So are we talking back to district court? Like, what happens now? It's silent. It's like, I don't know what happens.
In the absence of a specific remedy in this initiative, the default would be
back
current
to
law.
District. Okay. Thank you.
Just yep.
But I don't know that either of those are a major feature. I mean, that's just part of the process.
Background law. That's what I was wondering. And
And we didn't put it in 38, nor did we say anything about the timeline, even though there was a timeline in 38.
I don't know that the timeline,
is
okay.
a major feature. Take it out. Yeah.
Okay. And we lost our screen again.
Oh, no. Just in time for me to read
it. I guess
it.
We're done.
So the good news is we know why the screen's not working, but the bad news is we can't fix it right now.
All right. Well,
how's the first part good news?
Maybe during lunch.
Okay, so I think we need a motion to adopt the changes as reflected on the screen, starting on line 9 with the word and, through the remainder of line 11.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I'm going to read it really quick while the screen's still on. as it is, it's an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning redistricting in Colorado and in connection therewith, renaming the Colorado Reapportionment Commission as the Colorado Redistricting Commission, directing that the commission redistrict congressional districts as well as legislative districts, requiring appointment of members with equal representation from each major political party and those not affiliated with any major party, prohibiting commission members from being lobbyists or incumbent members or candidates for either the state legislature or Congress, adopting existing criteria for congressional districts and adding competitiveness to the criteria for state and legislative or state legislative and congressional districts, requiring that only the nonpartisan staff of the commission may submit plans to the commission, and requiring that the commission's work be done in public meetings.
So I would move adoption of the title as it appears on the screen for proposed initiative 2015-16-107.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. That would take us to 2015-2016 number 103, but I'm told that's been withdrawn by the proponents, so that takes us to 104. Maybe you can confirm 103 for me.
Thank you, Mr. Ward. Thank you, Master of the Board.
Thank you.
Oh, that's helpful. Thank you.
Madam Chair, that's correct. And I'm sure there's an interesting getting to lunch, I think, because you've seen very similar measures to 104, 5, and 6 before. We can knock these out in the next 10 minutes.
Sure. I don't know if we're breaking for lunch, so, you know.
All right.
Well, she's leaving, and you just got here.
It's true. I haven't had lunch yet, though. I'm fine either way. I can eat lunch here while I do my public duty as well. I don't. Okay.
I have.
Council has brought snacks for the board. Let the record reflect.
All right. Madam Chair, Trey Rogers, counsel for the proponents of proposed initiative 104, John Blake Harrison and John Grayson Robinson, both of whom have completed their affidavits this morning.
All right. So on 104, let's just start with what the change is. Well, tell me your single subject, and then
sure,
tell me
single
how
subject
changes.
Is the measure concerns the sale of beer and wine in Colorado food stores. So the board has seen two versions of this measure before. There are only three substantive changes. The first is the threshold for food sales has dropped from 25% to 20%. The second is there is now a requirement that a food store must have at least 3,000 square feet of indoor sales area. And third, the exclusion of income from fuel products and lottery ticket sales for calculation of the amount of food sales has been removed from 60.
All right. So let's. Is there anyone here signed up to speak on this? No? All right. So on the single subject, any questions from the board?
No.
Make a motion.
I move that we find that proposed initiative 2015-16 number 104 constitutes a single subject, and we proceed to set a title.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. That takes us to the staff draft. Do you have any comments on the staff draft?
Only one. On line 5, the clause that begins, including income, we feel is unnecessary in the title. We included this language primarily to distinguish 104 from 6061 in previous versions. But it is really a detail. I think the public would certainly expect that if you're calculating the gross income, annual gross income of a food store, that would include all things sold, including fuel products and lottery tickets. Other than that, we're fine with the staff draft.
And there's enough changes that it'll be distinguished from some of your other?
Madam Chair, there are enough. We would only advance one of these beyond designation and fixing of a title in any
event. We've heard that before. Okay.
And if I can, because I think it's my issue.
I suspect I know what you're going to say.
Well, I'll do it quickly. I think if we can incorporate my comments from the previous initiatives, number 60 and number 61.
60 and 61.
Which I was hoping we'd have something from the Supreme Court by now, but we don't. In terms of the terminology that's used in the statement of single subject, I still have my objections over that terminology for the reasons I had previously stated on 60 and 61, and so I just want to have the record reflect that.
Sure.
And Madam Chair, along similar lines, I would ask that we consider as part of the record for 104 and then 105 and 106 not only the title board's work on 60 and 61 but on 51 and 52 before that, which I believe
was the first.
Ms. Eubanks, was the first time that we had that discussion.
Right.
That's
we
correct.
Will incorporate those for the record on this one. When we get to the next two, let's do it again so that we don't lose track, and then we'll have a great time on the rehearings.
And I think in terms of the staff draft, I agree with Mr. Rogers in terms of I don't believe the phrase on 5 and 6 needs to appear, so we would strike the comma going including income from fuel products and lottery ticket sales, comma.
I agree.
I agree.
And I would move that change.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Anything else, or should I read it? Okay. So as it reads, it's a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning the sale of full-strength beer and wine by food stores and in connection therewith, creating a license allowing food stores to sell malt and vinous liquors, commonly referred to as full-strength beer and wine, for off-premises consumption, defining a food store as an establishment with at least 3,000 square feet of indoor sales area that earns at least 20% of its annual gross income from the sale of food, allowing a food store that holds a valid license to sell fermented malt beverages, commonly referred to as 3.2 beer, to apply to become a food store license, allowing the ownership of multiple food store licenses, including by certain retail liquor licensees, and prohibiting the sale of full-strength beer or wine by a food store employee who is under 21 years of age.
So I would move the adoption of the title as it appears on the screen for proposed initiative 2015-16, number 104.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. That takes us to proposed initiative 2015-2016-105. And Mr. Rogers, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us what the single subject is and the differences.
Madam Chair, Trey Rogers representing the proponents for proposed initiative 105, John Blake Harrison and John Grayson Robinson, both of whom are here and have completed their affidavit today. The single subject of 105 concerns the sale of beer and wine in food stores. There is a single change from, in this case, initiative 60, and that is the percentage of food sales in the definition of food store has dropped from 25% to 20%. Just to save us maybe a minute, the proponents have no issues with the staff draft, and I would also ask that the board incorporate the deliberations and the discussion of 51, 52, and 60 and 61 in the record as it pertains to this measure.
All right, we'll incorporate those. Does anybody have any questions for the proponent? Is there anyone who wishes to speak on this issue? All right. You want to do
So this one still excludes the fuel, the sales from lottery and fuel products, right?
It does, Ms. Eubanks.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to do a single subject motion.
I think the measure constitutes a single subject, and so I would move that the title board proceed to set a title.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, so this one is a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning the sale of full-strength beer and wine by food stores and in connection therewith creating a license allowing food stores to sell malt and vinous liquors, commonly referred to as full-strength beer and wine, for off-premise consumption, defining a food store as an establishment that earns at least 20% of its annual gross income, excluding income from fuel products and lottery ticket sales from the sale of food, allowing a food store that holds a valid license to sell fermented malt beverages, commonly referred to as 3.2 beer, to apply to become a food store licensee, allowing the ownership of multiple food store licensees, including by certain retail liquor licensees, and prohibiting the sale of full-strength beer and wine, beer or wine, by a food store employee who is under 21 years of age.
I would move the title as it appears on the screen for proposed initiative 2015-16, number 105.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, that takes us to 2015-2016, number 106. And Mr. Rogers, you want to?
Madam Chair, Trey Rogers, representing the proponents of proposed initiative 106, John Blake Harrison and John Grayson Robinson, both of whom are here today and both of whom have completed their affidavits. 106 varies from the measure that the board has previously set title for proposed initiative number 61. In only one respect, the threshold for the amount of food a food store must sell to qualify for the definition has been dropped from 25% to 20%. The proponents have no objection to the staff draft, and I would ask that the board incorporate its work and deliberations on measures 51, 52, 60, and 61 in the record for this measure.
We'll incorporate those. And does anyone on the board have any questions for the proponent?
I just have one question, and that's the significance or lack thereof of the word only that
right.
was added in the first provision about being only able to sell malt and vinous liquors. That's different than the other versions?
You're right, and I'm sorry I didn't mention that. I didn't think that a substantive change. I think it just clarifies the language, clarifies the initiative. And
is that related to the elimination of the licenses after 2019, or is it?
No, that's only pertaining
because
to the
you
new
either
license.
Have the license and convert it, or you apply for the license newly.
Well, I think it's pertaining to, I think what it's saying is no spiritus liquor, only malt and vinous liquor.
I see. So it doesn't have to do with the different licenses for 3.2 versus full strength. It has to do with the license for only beer and wine versus beer, wine, and liquor.
I suppose it makes that clearer as well, because this is the version that would eliminate the 3.2 licenses.
I wonder if, just to be consistent, we should delete that word, because I understand it might be clarifying. I don't think it's strictly necessary.
If I could, Mr. Yarger, I think it's included in the staff draft because this was a change in the language of the initiative itself from 61 to 105. So I suspect that's why it appears in the staff draft. Opponents don't have a feeling about it one way or another, whether only is in or out.
It's my understanding that 103 and 106 had the word only inserted, and that 104 and 105 did not.
Yeah, so maybe the purpose behind the inclusion was to differentiate between full strength beer and wine and 3.2.
I didn't notice that change in the actual language. I'm
just one small word, and yeah, I don't know, but I just wanted to ask and make sure that I was keeping all the different versions straight. But I have no problem in reflecting that in this title.
I don't either.
And as long as the proponents don't.
No objection to that.
Okay. So I think, first of all, we need a motion I move that the title board finds that proposed initiative number 106 constitutes a single subject, and we proceed to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 All right, and that takes us to the staff draft. Is there anyone here who wishes to comment on this? Okay.
And again, this one still has the exclusion of the fuel products and the lottery sales.
It does, yes.
Okay.
So this one reads, a change to the Colorado revised statutes concerning the sale of 3.2 beer, full strength beer, and wine for off-premises consumption, and in connection therewith creating a license allowing food stores to sell only malt and vinous liquors, commonly referred to as full-strength beer and wine, for off-premises consumption, defining a food store as an establishment that earns at least 20% of its annual gross income, excluding income from fuel products and lottery ticket sales from the sale of food, allowing a food store that holds a valid license to sell fermented malt beverages, commonly referred to as 3.2 beer, to apply to become a food store licensee, allowing the ownership of multiple food store licenses, including by certain retail liquor licensees, prohibiting the sale of full-strength beer or wine by a food store employee who's under 21 years of age, and as of January 1, 2019, eliminating licenses to sell 3.2 beer for off-premises consumption.
So I would move adoption of the title as it appears on the screen for proposed initiative 2015-16, number 106.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, we're going to take a quick break and swap out some members, and then we'll be right back.
So, are you okay with that?
Yeah. We narrowly missed it. I'm too nervous to do one with you anyways.
Why?
As you look at the chopped liver thing.
I don't know. It's too intimidating. You've done it for too long. You're too good at it. Jason's less intimidating. You can believe that.
What I hate is when it's subject matter I know nothing about, like kitchen law. I have to just ask stupid questions. And I'm like, it doesn't seem right here.
Yeah. Well, that's everything for me except for election law. So.
Well,
see,
I mean, that's, sorry. It just helped get my stuff
up. So, are you just doing the bingo? Are you doing the whole afternoon?
I think just bingo.
No, because.
Because they are should go fast.
Although we have three different rehearing motions on the five that we're rehearing.
Ours took a little while on two election ones, like I said. That's no surprise.
Yeah. Have fun.
Right.
I'll try to get back.
Yeah. No, don't. Don't listen.
Where did it work yesterday?
What's that?
Trump.
Sorry.
Oh, I have my own? Wow.
Yeah.
This is a big time.
Make sure my title's right. I change it a lot.
Have faith, Troy.
Fred's hobby's getting in the way of his day job.
Okay, sorry, I'm ready.
Okay, so the title board will reconvene. The time is 12:40. For the record, I'm Troy Bratton, Legal and Policy Manager. I've joined the title board as the designee of the Secretary of State. Jason Gellender has joined the title board as the designee of the Director of Office of Legislative Legal Services. On the agenda, we are at Initiative 2015-16, number 90, Definitions in Bingo and Raffles Law. Would the proponents please come forward and identify themselves? Yourselves.
Good afternoon. Robin Jones, proponent for Initiative 90, 2015-2016-90.
And Pamela Jones.
Thank you. Do the board members have any questions for the proponents on the measure?
Well, let's see. I do have just a brief question. Is what is your intent with this measure?
Our intent is to, right now as it stands, a organization can hold a charity event, but they are not allowed to solicit funds. They are not allowed to say, this is a charity event. Can you suggest a donation, $20, $50? You can't do any solicitation whatsoever on a charity fund for the charity itself. And it's mainly just for the charities, a 501c registered through the state of Colorado, where, say, XYZ nonprofit organization wants to hold a poker tournament versus a bingo or a raffle, where they can actually have a poker tournament, charge a buy-in, say $50, where $25 would go towards the player pool and the $25 raised would go to the charity itself, or however they want to divide it. My suggestion would be at least 50-50 split between the charity, and then the rest of the money could be distributed through the organization that holds the event, as far as, and then some money can go as the players to actually win some money in the long run also.
I don't think I have any questions.
Okay.
I don't either. Is there anybody in the audience who would wish to comment on the single subject of this initiative?
And by no means is this stepping on any toes of the casinos, because the casinos right now can legally hold a charity event for a charity, but we've tried to do it through casinos. The casinos don't have any initiative to hold one because they don't make any money. It doesn't benefit the casino because the casinos have to pay their employees, they have to pay the dealers and everything like that. And this is just for poker tournaments, which is a one set event, and it's not going to be held throughout the year. So they would have to be regulated through the bingo. So the event that's holding the event would have to go get their license through the state to hold that one single event.
Is there a motion?
Sure.
And if you need clarification on poker per se, whenever somebody says they're going to the casino, they're going to go play poker. They take, say, $500 up there with them. They sit down at the table and they buy chips. Well, actually, you rent chips. And the chips do have a money value, so you take those chips off the table, you take them to the cash, and you turn them in and get money. Where in a poker tournament, you set one set fee, say, but you go to a tournament, you pay $100, you get chips, say 2,000 chips, which have no money value, and you play until the last man standing has all the chips and you declare a winner. So the chips in a tournament have no money value whatsoever.
Thank you.
Okay. I would move then that we find that proposed initiative 2015-16 number 90, definitions in bingo and raffles law, has a single subject, and we have jurisdiction to set a title.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes unanimously. So now we move on to setting the title. Is there any comment? Do you have any comment on the staff draft as proposed?
No, I don't.
Okay.
It's pretty clear.
Any discussion by the board on the staff draft?
I have a couple of comments. The first one is purely technical, which is this is a change. A change to the Colorado Revised Statutes, not an amendment. And that's pursuant to our statute that requires that language.
Right.
The second issue is more of one that I don't know. I mean, I guess there's technically a slight expansion of the bingo and raffles law. This proposed initiative is quite limited in its scope in the sense that it doesn't make a lot of potential conforming amendments to the statute that would make it very clear exactly the extent to which the regulations and oversight of bingo and raffles also applies to poker. Given that lack of clarity, I think what I might say is suggest is striking through expanding and say concerning the inclusion of poker tournaments in the bingo and raffles law, which also just shortens things a bit. And then I would just take out the to include a poker tournament.
Do we need the trailer?
I was just going to say, it seems like the trailer is swallowing up the...
Here's,
I almost think the trailer should be the single subject.
Well, here's the rationale for what I'm thinking is that this is one where it's not that we consider effects, but it's a little bit tricky to figure out exactly what the effects of this are, I think, because it's not a very comprehensive amendment in terms of all the statutory provisions that are existing. So the inclination is saying we're including it in this law, and then in connection therewith, I just had it to those definitions, and that says that's all we're doing, and then, you know, we will let the regulatory agencies, and if the General Assembly wants to clarify down the road, you know, figure out what clarification might be needed. That's my thinking.
I agree with that. I just wonder if it wouldn't be better to, you know, kind of swap them around and say concerning the inclusion of poker tournament to the current definitions of charitable gaming and game of chance in the bingo and raffles law, then we don't even need a trailer.
That's fine. I have no objection to that.
I know Steve's still typing it on the screen, but do you, as a proponent, have any comments or concerns with?
No, if language? You exclude, when you say exclude to poker tournaments, that means just a new way of saying it's allowed, right?
Well, go ahead.
I think, why don't we just let it show up clean on the screen, and then I think it'll be a lot easier to, there we go.
I agree with that.
I'm comfortable with that.
All right.
Okay. Go ahead.
Ready for motion then, or do you want to see if anyone else objects?
Should I read it in? Or,
yeah, okay. Probably.
So proposed initiative 2015-16 number 90 reads, a change to the Colorado revised statutes concerning the addition of poker tournament to the current definitions of charitable gaming and game of chance in the bingo and raffles law.
Only question is, I know in the staff draft we sort of had bingo and raffles law done that statutory form with the quotation marks and capital letters. I don't know what the actual practice is for titles. Any thoughts?
Any thoughts?
Does our council have any thoughts?
That's how it appears in the statutes. Bingo raffle.
It's a short title in the statute, so it's capitalized and has the quotation marks around it. So if we're using them for the definitions, I might be inclined to stick with it for this. I think it makes it clear that it's a specific act and not general laws that happen to apply to bingo and raffles.
But it is the act.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think we need to reread it, though, because it's the same words.
Sure.
So with that, I would move that we set the title for proposed initiative 2015-16 number 90 as we've amended the staff draft, and it now appears on the screen.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It's unanimous.
You're all set.
That's it.
That is it. Sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks. You too.
Okay, we are back on the record on initiative number 2015-2016, number 101, state minimum wage. And Ms. Tierney, if you could just introduce yourself and your proponents for the record.
Yes, thank you, members of the title board. Martha Tierney, on behalf of the proponents, Nancy Moorhead and Dewey Pham, who are both here and have executed their affidavits.
And can you start by telling us what the single subject of your measure is?
Yes, the single subject of the measure is an increase in the state minimum wage rate.
All right. Is there anybody here who wishes to speak on this issue? Any questions for the proponent on the single subject?
I don't have any.
No.
You want to make a motion?
Sure. I would move that we find the proposed initiative 2015-16 number 101 has a single subject and the board has jurisdiction to set a title.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That takes us to the staff draft. Ms. Tierney, do you have any comments on the staff draft?
No, proponents are fine with the staff draft as written.
I know this is a question that the Legislative Council had, and I don't think it affects our title setting, but I am curious what the difference between cost of living and inflation.
So one of the things that we looked at in doing this measure was how to adjust, how to adjust for increases but not for decreases.
Decreases, yes. That's what I...
And so that's why we... And that, as you know, is the only difference between 101 and 102, and we were playing around with which one of those would do that better.
Understood. Well, I don't have any comments on the title.
I think we potentially could shorten it just a little bit.
Okay.
What suggestions? The first question is whether we actually need the word rate in there on line two. I would just say minimum wage.
That's fine.
Yeah. And then I think we had, let's say, increasing. And then down below where it says where it repeats minimum wage, there's other objections to just saying it.
Yeah, I think that'd be fine.
There's one on, so I would say, you know, in connection there with increasing the minimum wage to 9.30 with annual increases of 90 each January 1st, and then until it on line three, and then do it again on line four, we already have. And then the only other, well, there's two other things. I think where we have each year, do we want to, how do we feel about just saying and annually adjusting it thereafter and taking out each year? It's just one fewer word. And then the final thing I'd suggest is whether the for cost of the as measured by the consumer price index used for Colorado, that's part of the existing, it's not a change in this measure. It's part of the existing constitutional provision. I don't know that we need it.
We have no objection to taking it out.
Just so ending with
cost of living increases,
period. That's fine with me.
Yeah, that's fine with me too. So as it reads now, it's an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning an increase in the state minimum wage and in connection therewith increasing the minimum wage to $9.30 per hour with annual increases of 90 cents each January 1 until it reaches $12 per hour effective January 2020 and annually adjusting it thereafter for cost of living increases.
The proponents are fine with those changes.
You want concerning and I'd be fine taking that out too. It's short enough, but I could leave it in too.
You mean just increasing?
Yeah.
That's fine with me.
You want to take it out?
No, I would say, I think we need a title clause and a trailer.
Okay, then let's leave it in.
But what we could do is an amendment to the Colorado Constitution increasing the state minimum wage and in connection therewith. Unless...
I'm fine. I mean,
I like that.
Okay. Saving words? Okay.
Yeah. All right, so now it's an amendment to the Colorado Constitution increasing the state minimum wage and in connection therewith increasing the minimum wage to $9.30 per hour with annual increases of 90 cents each January 1 until it reaches $12 per hour effective January 2020 and annually adjusting it thereafter for cost of living increases.
So I guess what I would say is, do we really need the end in connection therewith? Because it could say an amendment to the Colorado Constitution increasing the minimum wage to $9.30 per hour with annual increases.
That was my initial thought.
Because it's now it says increasing the minimum wage twice. It seems like it's...
Are we okay? We're okay with that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's short enough. We don't need...
I do, too.
So we don't need a separate title and trailer. Perfect. Read it one more time, Chair.
An amendment to the Colorado... this was my... An amendment to the Colorado Constitution increasing the minimum wage to $9.30 per hour with annual increases of 90 cents each January 1 until it reaches $12 per hour effective January 2020 and annually adjusting it thereafter for cost of living increases.
Excellent.
Okay.
All right. I move that we set the title for proposed initiative 2015-16 number 101 as we've amended the staff draft, and it now appears on the screen.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 All right.
And from now on, I'll listen more carefully to Madam Chair.
No, that's fine. I just wasn't totally attached to the idea, so I would have gone either way. All right, that takes us to proposed initiative 2015-2016, number 102, state minimum wage. And Ms. Tierney, again, if you can introduce yourself, your proponents, and then tell us the single subject and how this one's different.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the title board. Martha Tierney on behalf of the proponents, Nancy Moorhead and Dewey Pham, who are present and have signed their affidavits. Proposed initiative 2015-2016-102, the single subject is an increase in the state minimum wage, and the only difference between 102 and 101 is that 102 uses the term inflation as opposed to 101's use of the terms cost of living.
Okay.
I have no questions or comments on single subject.
All right, does anybody here wish to speak on this? You want to make a motion on single subject?
Sure. I move that we find the proposed initiative 2015-16 number 102 has a single subject and the board has jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. That brings us to the staff draft, which we've modified to be, mirroring 101 except for the change. So as it reads right now, it's an amendment. Oh, sorry.
All right, there is just one more
little
thing. Is I think the adjusting needs to be increasing to match the language of the actual language of the initiative.
Thank you, Mr. Gallander, because that is the other difference.
Right.
Instead of the other measure used, uses the term cost of living increase, and this then uses the term increased annually for inflation.
Okay. All right, so then the way it reads now is an amendment to the Colorado Constitution increasing the minimum wage to $9.30 per hour with annual increases of 90 cents each January 1 until it reaches $12 per hour effective January 2020 and annually increasing it thereafter for inflation.
Ready?
I am.
I move that we set the title for proposed initiative 2015-16, number 102, as we've amended the staff draft and as it now appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right.
Thank you.
I think we're going to take a short break again. We probably need to do affidavits, Steve, don't we, and other stuff.
I am
about
going
5 minutes or so.
Sure.
One minor thing. I don't believe it was actually made on the final agenda. Is that a problem?
This isn't the update, but I've got the update.
Okay.
That's
all I was asking.
You probably do that today.